One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hello and welcome back to the Statman Dave Football Podcast. This is episode 75. Today, we're going to be joined by Nico Morales to review the Champions League final, the whole Champions League, team of the season, game of the season, absolutely everything, of course, incorporating the news. But first up, Nico, is it a sunny day over with you in the US of A?
It's not. It's been raining almost every day here, kind of like London, I guess. So, it's kind of been poor weather for us, unfortunately, but hopefully the sun will return soon because I love it.
Yeah, it's been hot and cold, been a hit and miss, really. Yesterday was chucking it down, today is a little bit more brighter. And just a little bit of news as well on the podcast. We're going to take a little bit of a break for about a week and a half, maybe 2 weeks, while I need a break. I'm starting to lose my mind. Before, if you'd heard of any of the recordings or any of the conversation before we started recording, you would have thought I was absolutely mental. I've just come to the end, I'm a little bit tired, so we're going to take about a 2 week break and then come back with maybe weekly shows over the transfer window until obviously the action gets started again, and then potentially we'll go back to the daily, which is exciting. But anyway, let's dive into the news today. First up, Harry Kane on his move to Werder Bremen. If you didn't see the tweet yesterday, it was unbelievable. Werder Bremen tweeting Harry Kane to hashtag Werder confirmed with a winky smiley face. They attached that to a video of a hurricane or a little whirlwind going round the Werder Bremen stadium. I thought that was the best tweet I've ever seen. I quickly smashed on a retweet. Hurricane, Harry Kane. I finally got that into people's vocabulary. Nico, did you think the tweet was as funny as I did?
No. Maturity level is quite past yours, even though you're quite a bit older than I am. So, you know, we're entertained by all sorts of different things.
Nico, you just need to have you just need to be young, be free. As you get older, as the years pass, you get grumpier, you get more tired. It's one of these things, Nico, where you've just got to enjoy little things in life, like Werder Bremen's Twitter account, which you go and follow Werder Bremen's Twitter account. I'm going to give them a shout out. I think it's Werder Bremen _EN. That's the English version. Of course, if you speak German, go and check out their German Twitter account. But anyway, there's some news going around the media at the moment that Claude Puel is about to be sacked as Southampton manager. That Nico, you were pretty upset about this on Twitter, saying that United had paid a referee in the EFL Cup final, which is completely incorrect. But what's your stance on Puel? You think he's done a good job this season?
Yeah, I think he's a really talented manager. I think Southampton has been on an upward trajectory for the past few seasons now because of some excellent behind-the-scenes management. The club has done exceptionally well, even when they've lost their managers and their players and stuff like that. So they've done exceptionally well to replace those guys, and I think they've continued that with Puel. The only reason I think he really gets a bad rap is because – so they finished eighth in the Premier League, which although maybe people feel like with a few better performances with a bit more attacking flair to their I guess style under Puel, they could have garnered more results. I really don't think that's the case. Their underlying statistics reveal that they're about seventh or eighth in the Premier League with a lot of their shot conversion numbers and their shot numbers. So I think where they ended up is pretty deserved, and I think our perception of him would have been completely different if the United game would have gone differently. And however you view that final, I think Southampton did exceptionally well, and bar, you know, an offside goal, maybe our perception would have been, like I said, would have been completely different. So I think he's a really good manager. I think he gets bad rap because sort of towards the end of the season, Southampton, I think, failed to score at home for like a couple of games, and fans are, you know, deservedly upset about that. But watching them their last few games, I think it's something that sometimes the mid-table clubs like a Stoke or a Southampton or clubs like that, it's sometimes difficult to motivate those players when there isn't a big international tournament coming up, because they don't really have a lot to play for and they don't want to injure themselves. So it can be difficult to motivate them to play the same intensity as they did in different parts of the season. So I think he's a really good manager, and I hope that Southampton don't sack him, because I want to continue to see him in the Premier League.
Number one, whether or not that goal was onside or offside, Zlatan Ibrahimovic would have won that AFL Cup final on his own anyway. And number two, it is quite an interesting one, though, losing Sadio Mane to Liverpool, who was, I think, there was the top scorer that season before, that won games on his own with his goals. I remember scoring a hat-trick against Liverpool that was fantastic. So it was an interesting one. They did lose him, and they tried to replace him with Gabbiadini that had a really good spell. But there were goals dried up for, you know, Jay Rodriguez, Charlie Austin got injured. It was a weird one for their forward line. Nathan Redmond not really stepping up into Sadio Mane's shoes. A very, very good season for him, but not at the same level as Mane had before he moved to Liverpool. So it's an interesting one. I thought Romeo has been fantastic in central midfield. He won their player of the year. It was brilliant. Every time I watched Southampton, he was the standout player in defensive midfield, and has really progressed since leaving Chelsea on a permanent deal. So yeah, Southampton, it's an interesting one. What they do next, it will be very interesting. Of course, they had Pochettino, who is a very exciting manager, moving to the Puel style is going to be quite interesting. So it is a different one. It's a different kettle of fish. But anyway, let's move on to where some Mbappe and Monaco news. Apparently, Le Parisien is reporting that Monaco and Mbappe are going to ignore all offers this summer. That's after Arsenal reportedly offered and Real Madrid €130 million for the young Frenchman. Moving to Germany, Borussia Dortmund have signed Maximilian Philipp from Freiburg. Philipp is a good player, a target man type striker. Could complement Aubameyang very well. Under Peter Bosch, who's taken over there. Nico, Peter Bosch to Dortmund. Exciting, right?
Yeah, probably would have liked to see Lucien Favre, but he's only been at Nice for a summer, so maybe we'll hold off on that. But yeah, Bosch is going to be a good, exciting manager over there. I think he's got an interesting football style. And, you know, I think if you looked at the philosophy that he wanted to enact with Ajax, he did that successfully in the domestic league, but unfortunately it didn't necessarily translate to the highest level against Manchester United, but against, you know, or with some better players that Dortmund definitely have, that style of football under him will only increase, you would think. So really excited to see what he does at Dortmund.
Exactly. You know, you've got so many young players in there. Dahoud joins from Gladbach as well. You potentially expect Younes as well. They're probably the second best player in the Europa League behind Paul Pogba this season. Fantastic for Ajax. Lovely short frame. Loves coming in onto that right foot. Very tricky. Completed more dribbles than any other player in the Europa League. Could be quite an interesting signing, but it is going back to the Thomas Tuchel problem at the club. As well with Bosch leaving Ajax, apparently he was forced out, or he massively fell out with the board. In a way, what Ajax have is they have a board of directors that we know in England and you know we all know, and then they've got this board underneath. There's basically a board of advisors with the likes of Bergkamp, Edwin van der Sar. Apparently those guys forced out Jonk, who did some great work in the academy for Ajax, you know, a Cruyff sort of disciple. They forced him out over the last summer, and then apparently Peter Bosch was nearly forced out in January, and then again has been forced out at the end of the season, which is a real weird one. These guys who are ex-Ajax players, and you know, it's kind of this Bayern Munich model that Ajax are trying to build, but they've lost a great manager, a real good manager, and a manager that loved Ajax, which is such a weird one. You know, Peter Bosch was a Feyenoord player, but he used to drive to Amsterdam, to watch Ajax.
He had an Ajax season ticket.
Exactly. And it just seems like a weird one, Nico. You think it's definitely the wrong way, right, for their club. One of the best managers we've seen. Frank de Boer was an interesting manager. The style of football wasn't too great. I really like how Peter Bosch had Ajax playing.
Yeah, he was an excellent manager, and I think he brought a style of football that was really, really went along with the club. Like you said, he had a passion for Ajax. He had an emotional connection, although he did play for their rivals earlier in his career. So I think the decision to let him go is an interesting one, but unfortunately it's one that I think that those clubs in those sort of leagues are put in quite often. You know, they have to let go of their best players and their best managers, similar to some of the lower clubs in the Premier League, to better teams and bigger teams, because that was probably on Peter Bosch's, managerial evolution or checklist that he needed to move up at some point, and he took the first opportunity to do so. So they probably didn't want to deal with a manager that ultimately had his foot halfway out the door, but hopefully they can bring in a good manager to replace it, considering how many good players they have.
A whole host of top players that Ajax have sort of brought through in the last season or so. Sorry, that is the police. They are coming to get me. So in the last, last year, Boss has managed Vitesse, Maccabi Tel Aviv, and of course Ajax, and now Borussia Dortmund, but he will do a great job there. Maybe Ziyech will head to Dortmund. That'd be exciting. Very, very exciting. Player that's coming to the sort of peak of his career, 24 years old, so it could be quite interesting. In terms of other news, Manchester United must pay apparently €100 million to sign Andrea Belotti from Torino. There's a video that's gone out on my YouTube channel today, so make sure you go and check it out in terms of Belotti's playing style if you know nothing about the forward. I spent a bit of time watching Torino this season, and Belotti I'm a big fan of. Moving to some other news, Liverpool face a fight to sign Virgil van Dijk, as Southampton want up to £75 million for Virgil van Dijk. Nico, you don't think he's going to solve all the problems though, right?
No, as I said pre-record, you know, I think I said this on the front three a few days ago, and not an argument, Lawrence. You know, I love Lawrence, but I think the conception with a lot of defensive signings is that they're going to come in and make things better. And from what I'm hearing from a lot of people is that he's a big upgrade on their system. And I just think, though, I think he's a good player, and a lot of people are interpreting it as I'm angry as a Manchester City fan that my club wasn't able to sign him. That I'm trying to be as objective as I can in my analysis, and I think as good as a player as he is, in the system that Jurgen Klopp currently plays, the center backs are exposed because of the way that they press the ball. And once that press is beaten, those center backs are pulled out of position and they're exposed. So it doesn't really matter who you play in those center back positions to a relative extent. They're still going to be exposed. They're still going to be made to be look stupid to some extent unless the systematic issues in their system get fixed. And so as much as you want to claim that Virgil van Dijk is a huge upgrade, you're buying someone that is slightly better or perhaps slightly worse considering his positional issues at Southampton than Dejan Lovren or Matip or Klavan in those positions, and yet you're claiming that that's worth $60 million. I really don't understand the logic behind that, because you're paying $60 million, like I said, for someone that's going to execute the same style of football with a system that has obvious systematic issues, because Jurgen Klopp has failed to move on from his issues at Dortmund. You know, that was one of the big things in his final year at Dortmund, was that Mats Hummels, as you've touched was pulled out of position. When center backs that are bigger and not as quick are pulled out against quick and agile wingers, it's a recipe for disaster. So as much as Virgil van Dijk is a good player, I'm not disputing that, it's $60 million that could probably be spent better elsewhere, considering Emre Can, Jordan Henderson, and other players in that midfield aren't as good as enacting that press. So in my opinion, it's not the best bit of business, but you know, I'm just a bitter Manchester City fan, apparently.
Very bitter, very, very bitter. And all that stuff you were tweeting about Southampton winning the EFL Cup has just confirmed those rumours, Nico. But I would agree with you. I think in defensive midfield, Liverpool need to get a guy in there. Emre Can is far too inconsistent to play that role. Jordan Henderson, with his gait issues, is going to have injuries through his career. So they need a defensive midfielder, you know, a Casemiro-type defensive midfielder that can defend those wide areas. Almost someone like Fabinho would be perfect. And at centre-half as well, they need to be agile, they need to be quick, they need to be like Sergio Ramos and Rafael Varane. Obviously, they're the two best in the world, but they need to get guys of the same mould there. Maybe centre-backs that have, you know, that have played full-back in their career and so forth. Again, great tactical points there, Nico. In other news as well, Nolito apparently is going to be leaving Manchester City because of the weather and lack of games. Nolito on life in Manchester, it was like living in a cave. Nolito, you are a Muppet. Have you never been to the Northern Quarter? Have you never been out your house? Stop disrespecting my hometown. Nico as well, you're a fan of Manchester. You think that Nolito should back off too, right?
No, I completely agree with him. Have you heard of what Pep Guardiola said about the food in Manchester as well?
Go on, amuse me.
He said, because somebody, I think he was answering Manchester City fans' questions for a fan video that the club did, and he said, you know, somebody asked him what food he liked better in Manchester, or what if the food was better here or in Germany, and he said, you know, I prefer neither. I prefer the Mediterranean food in Spain, and if you disagree with me, you know, try the food here and then go to Italy or go to Spain and tell me that the food is not better there. So I think some Spaniards at times can have difficulty adjusting to the gloom and doom life in England to some extent, considering the sunny, warm days of Spain.
has obviously never had chips and gravy, or he's never had a chip balm. What a muppet. So simple to get, so easy, available pretty much everywhere. Seriously, Guardiola, go and sort yourself out. So we're going to wrap up some transfer news now. First up, Liverpool are in talks with Sporting Lisbon over the transfer of Gelson Martinez, according to Sky Sources, the player that registered the most assists in the Portuguese league this season. A very tricky winger, starred against Real Madrid for Sporting Lisbon in the Champions League this season. Morata, apparently United have bid €60 million. Real Madrid want €90 million, which is absolutely insane for a B-team player. Balotelli is going to join Borussia Dortmund, according to Mina Raiola, his agent, and AC Milan have snapped up Ricardo Rodriguez. And to finish things off, to move on into our next topic of discussion, some Juventus news. Allegri has signed a new deal until 2020, which moves us on to the Champions League final that happened on Saturday, but Nico was being lazy as hell and wouldn't jump on the podcast, so we're going to talk about it now. First up, of course, we've got to talk about Cristiano Ronaldo's performance, again, dominating the Champions League. 5 goals against Bayern in the quarters, a hat-trick against Atletico in the semis, and of course, a brace versus Juventus. He is the big-time player, right, Nico? The best finisher in world football. Where can he go next?
Where can he go next in terms of his position? I don't know. I think one of the things that Ronaldo does best is that people talk about, and this is consistent in the analysis, when we see Ronaldo is sort of a criticism of the defenders around him or the people that are defending him in a certain game. And you know, mainstream commentators and analysts often say, you know, what is that defender doing there? You know, what were they thinking? You have to track him. And I think that's a misanalysis and a miscredit to some of the things that Ronaldo does extremely well. The reason he's finding that space is because, you know, that's by design. That's something that he's learned to do. You know, he's learned how to not get marked in certain situations. And I think if you look at the second goal for Ronaldo in this game in against Juventus, you know, he comes from a very deep position. That's what he's so good at doing, is that he can get from point A to point B, point A in this case being sort of the top of the box, to point B, the end of that cross and into the goal very quickly. And it's just so difficult unless you've literally stuck a man on him for the entire game and wasted, not necessarily wasted, but taken one player out of your formation just to mark him for the entire game, then it's very difficult for anyone to really stop Ronaldo from at least getting shots on target, if not some pretty good goals. So he's an excellent player. He's got excellent movement, and that's the best thing that he's done so far. I think Lawrence said that, you know, as players go on in their career, some of them move backwards to stay competitive within the game. But Ronaldo has moved forwards, and he's evolved his off-ball movement. And that's the thing that stands out to me the most and is the most dangerous about him.
I don't think you could criticise them, you know, Juventus for that second goal. It was a transition high up the pitch. Modric was brilliant, as he was for the whole game. Nicked the ball, quick 1-2 of Carvajal, and he's through. I think that run for Ronaldo, like you're saying, is trademark Ronaldo. That's what he's so good at, like you're saying. It's that movement from deep to get to an area where you score a goal. He's a simple player in a way. You know, he has the power, he has the speed, but it is that movement. There was a bit where Marcelo whipped a ball into the back post. Marcelo drifted inside a little bit of skill, and he whipped a ball to the back post. And Ronaldo's movement to nearly get on the chance was fantastic. I think he moved to the left, then moved to the right, and then went back again, went round the player and just missed the shot. But it was fantastic to see how alive he becomes. And I think that's the beauty of Cristiano Ronaldo, that he's so sharp in that penalty area. And just, you know, the records in the Champions League in the last 5 seasons are a joke. He's sort of been directly involved in 84 goals in the last 5 years. That's 31 more than Lionel Messi. Lionel Messi is the best player in the world. I don't deny that. I think Messi has things that Ronaldo doesn't. Messi is a complete player. He can do everything. Very, very good at passing, very, very good at dribbling. And Ronaldo is more of this clinical striker, should we say. And playing in Real's 4-4-2 diamond against Juve like he did against Atletico in the semi, it's just showing that potentially he may be moving to be a forward in the end, you know, the goals that he scored. I really like the first goal as well, the move from Real, really quick through, like a quick counter-attack, cruise to Benzema moving it on, Ronaldo standing his full back up, sliding Carvajal, and then getting back into that penalty area. Obviously, a deflection, but still a fantastic move with the speed. Apparently, though, we've got some breaking news. Liverpool have bid for Virgil van Dijk, and it has been rejected. Nico, how much is that for?
Now, you've misread the note that I put in there, but I'll correct you. They bid for Stefan de Vrij, who is Lazio center half, for €20 million, and that has been rejected. Apparently, that's coming from Sky. So I haven't seen much of De Vrij this season. I've seen him in the past, obviously, for the Dutch national team. But it's obvious, you know, Liverpool looking for a center back there. So interesting stuff coming out from Sky. What do you think, Dave?
Yeah, I quite liked it. I quite liked him at the World Cup under Louis van Gaal. I really thought that he would would be brought to United under Louis van Gaal. It was one of the players that I thought, you know, he looks quite good. Same with Bruno Martins Indio, I thought was excellent for the Netherlands. Again, a player that Louis van Gaal could have brought to Manchester United, but he didn't fancy it, which was a bit weird. Obviously, they work together every day in training and so forth, but I just don't understand Louis van Gaal's thoughts there. And, I, you know, he's a good player. Whenever I see him for Lazio, he's good. But anyway, let's move on to Real Madrid's fullbacks being so crucial in an attacking sense. In terms of Carvajal creating the first goal, he's got the most assists for any defender in the Champions League knockout stages this season. Absolutely brilliant. The goal that he set up for Ronaldo, but also Marcelo on the other side, who we've been absolutely, you know, raving about this season. For me, the second best player in the world. How impressed again, Nico, were you by Real Madrid's fullbacks in this system that is very narrow through the middle? This diamond in midfield has to be supported by the fullbacks, but they did such a good job going forward.
Yeah, I think it's one of the things that maybe someone like Zidane or the people in his technical staff, not to take away credit from Zidane, but I think it's a holistic effort here that, you know, they a weakness that they targeted in the final, which is there are weaknesses to the current trend in world football, like we've spoken about, which is that three-back system, which if you try to attack it centrally and with a 4-4-2 diamond as they did, then you can really get at the heart of that defense. But also, you know, you need that width from your fullbacks, and that's one of the things that Real Madrid have done so well for the past couple of years now, not just now, is their ability to get forward and their attacking ability from whichever fullbacks that they've had. And fortunately, they've had some of the best fullbacks in the world in recent seasons with Marcelo, and then really the addition of Dani Carvajal, someone that came, I think, from their youth academy and then went to Bayer Leverkusen for a year and then was bought back immediately because they realized what a mistake that was. And I think he's sort of the perfect partner to Marcelo. They're very similar. Carvajal obviously not as good, but the attacking ability that Marcelo and Carvajal bring, along with some of the defensive solidity that they can both bring and have improved upon it at their time at Real, is immense. So that, you know, their ability to link up with Gareth Bale and Cristiano Ronaldo, you know, that's one of the biggest partnerships. And I think something that Ruud Gullit talks about in his book is sort of the relationship that fullbacks and traditional wingers, or more traditional wingers, build with the players in front of them, and that crossing relationship, that link up relationship, and that's something that Real Madrid have done incredibly well between their fullbacks and their attacking players.
Yeah, it's just so interesting how this system has evolved, and those two guys are absolutely crucial. Again, Toni Kroos taking that lovely position behind Marcelo, which is sort of becoming a bit of a trend now in terms of his ball playing. Again, Kroos ran the show, completed more passes than any other player, and just kept Real ticking along. And again, like I mentioned in that counter-attack, it was his burst through midfield that got Real going forward for the opening goal. But he's just a fantastic player. He can pretty much do everything. In terms of the top three players in the world, something that me and Nico have chatted about a lot, I think it would be Kroos, Marcelo, Ronaldo. Ronaldo, Marcelo, Kroos for me. And Nico, you've said the other way around, Kroos at top, Ronaldo second and Marcelo third. But those guys, absolutely phenomenal of going forward. And I just love how they attack and how they go. But I think we're going to give a little shout out to Luka Modric again. When the pressure was on for Real Madrid, when Juventus were in the ascendant, Modric was that guy again, breaking tackles, dribbling through midfield, winning tackles, making interceptions. I just love Luka Modric as well. I'm a massive fan of this Real Madrid team, really am. Do you think it's got such depth and diversity to their tactics, their players and whatever? And it's obviously summed up by Casemiro, who again was brilliant. Casemiro is the reason why Real Madrid can attack with their fullbacks so good as well.
It's interesting though, if I can just interject. It's interesting. It's interesting how many things this Real Madrid side have taken benefit from that were originally, and I'm not taking, like I said, once again, I'm not taking away credit from Zidane, because he has done some brilliant things and things that we'll get onto later in the podcast with some specific statistics that they've done. But it's interesting how many things Real have benefited from that were originally Rafa Benitez's ideas, because he's the one that tried to bring in a traditional defensive midfielder to that side, because he realized with the absence of Di Maria that they were going to need at least someone doing a little bit more defensive work in that central midfield role. And he brought in Casemiro back from his loan at Porto. Then he tried to convince Ronaldo to be more of a number nine and less of a left winger, a move that which he refused. And then he did a few other things that Real Madrid really needed. And when I say Rafa Benitez didn't necessarily have the pedigree to pull those things off, I mean the way that the Spanish press treated him, the way that people viewed him in the hierarchy at Real Madrid. Zidane has, because of he was such a great player and holds such great respect amongst the people at the board and also the players, I think he has the ability to tell Ronaldo, hey, take a break from these few games, play as a number nine, do these things. And he's willing to listen to Zidane over Rafa Benitez to some extent, because he's willing to trust that. And I just think it's interesting how much they've benefited from Rafa. But Zidane has done some brilliant things as well. You know, the possession system and their ability to be so flexible, you know.
Yes, I'm getting a call. Breaking news in the podcast, I'm getting a call from a number from Worthing, England. Never heard of Worthing, England. I don't know if I'm going to answer it. Actually, should we do it live on the podcast? Let's do it. Hello? Oh, they hung up on me.
We've also got Lawrence McKenna on the document, just looking at the document, which is interesting. So, hey, Lawrence, how you doing?
Yeah, you know, diving in there. Apparently, we've got a video actually going out on the front three, which is a review of the Champions League. So, it'll be pretty. We'll have loads of things, a little vlog that me and Lawrence filmed on Monday. So, when it's out, go and check that out 100%. But anyway, back to Casemiro, who I was raving about because I think he's probably my favourite player in European football right now. Just unbelievable at defensive midfield. Again, won 7 out of his 8 tackles in a Champions League final. That takes him to 13 tackles out of 18 tackles he's won in Champions League final. Unbelievable. Smashed up Atletico last season, then smashed up Real this season. What I love about him is how he just breaks and controls the game, but also, you know, scored a goal. Again, scored a goal from a strike that was fortuitous. You know, it did deflect off, I can't remember whose heel it was, one of the defenders that came to close it down, or a central midfielder. But you've got to have that shot to score that goal. But what I loved about that goal was that he broke up the play. Juve were attacking down their right-hand side. Dani Alves was on the ball. Casemiro comes over, gives him a bit of a smash. No foul given by the referee. Dani Alves in a heap on the floor. Real go down, attack on that left-hand side. 2v1 on the left wing. And it drops to Casemiro and he bangs it home. I just love that Casemiro broke up that play, then scored that goal. Nico, are you a fan of Casemiro now? Have you started to believe that he is the best destroyer in world football?
Dave, I was a fan of Casemiro about 2 years ago when I believed Real Madrid should really bring in a solid defensive midfielder to their lineup. But yeah, he's excellent. He's improved upon his game massively. I mean, you've touched on it the most, I think, out of anyone. He's not just a destroyer. I think he was involved in as many goals, or the only people that were above him in terms of goal involvement in this competition were Ronaldo and Mbappe to some extent. So, you know, he's been incredible. He's improved his game. He's been put in offensive positions and also thrived in those positions, as well as the defensive destroyer role that he's been asked to take up at Real Madrid. So he's an excellent player. Sorry for the extra breathing here. My dog is freaking out because there's a thunderstorm. So if you do hear that in the background,
do you want to calm him down? Give him a little bit of a stroke, Nico. You know,
Make it okay
for him.
Freaking out.
Does he want to hear my voice? My tone, my dulcet.
I think that would unsettle him. But I think what does settle people down is Casemiro's ability to settle that midfield, if you like that transition. So yeah, he's excellent. You know, and Real Madrid, you know, it's one of those things. It's a great bit of business from Real, considering that they didn't have to pay a load of money for him. I think this is a player that either they bought at a very young age for a very small amount of money and developed themselves, or either developed all the way through from Castilla. So it's interesting that for everything that we say about Real Madrid, you know, their transfers and all the money that they spend on these certain players, their key player in Casemiro and other guys like that, like maybe in the future Kovacic and Asensio, you know, they paid so few for.
I think that's it. I think the Real Madrid squad at the moment is just so good. And Asensio, again, a player that I called for, that probably should have been introduced a little bit earlier. I thought Real should have switched to a 4-3-3 a little bit earlier, because there was space for Asensio to counter-attack, and he took his goal so well. A fantastic assist, again, by Marcelo, you know, going on a slaloming run that he's done so many times this season in European football, especially for Real Madrid. But that the finish from Asensio was perfect. And like I don't know any part of Asensio's game that isn't really, really good. I think he's got such ability from range. He's brilliant at dribbling on the ball. He's quick. He can finish. He's just got it all. And he's going to be the next big star in world football. And that's exactly what I believe with him. In terms of Juve, let's touch on Juve, because I felt they let themselves down a bit, especially Allegri. One of the things that I said coming into the game is that they had to do was switch from a 4-4-2 to a 3-5-2 if Real had gone with the diamond. Again, you go back to Italian football, the trends there. Why the 3-5-2 came in was because everyone played a 4-4-2 diamond. That came along, the 3-5-2, Juve started to dominate. That's because you have the two centre-halves at the back, you have the two strikers that are taken up, you've got an extra man at the back. And what you can do is you can use your wing-backs and pin their full-backs back. So imagine if Juve had pinned that back, Carvajal, and pinned back Marcelo. That kills Real Madrid's attack. And that's something that Allegri should have done. It would have been bold because it would have meant he had to maybe drop Mario Mandzukic. And looking back on that game now, you'd say, no, Dave, that's a stupid idea. Mandzukic scored one of the best goals we've seen in the Champions League final, a bicycle kick. But Mandzukic was good for the first 15 minutes of that game, and then he really dropped out of the game. If he played someone like Schiraro on the left wing in a 4-4-2 at the start, he could have then switched to a 3-5-2 with ease. If he went with Mario Mandzukic, the switch, well, he did go with that, the switch to a 3-5-2, a natural 3-5-2 with three central midfielders is a lot harder. You know, you'd have to push Dybala back into central midfield, a role that I don't think he's quite good at doing, better up, further up the pitch. So, again, I think Allegri made a bit of a mistake. He left the system the same throughout the whole game, didn't try to change anything. Nico, do you think that's a fair analysis? Do you think that I'm talking absolute dump, or do you think that's a good thing of Allegri's tactics and his formation?
No, definitely. I think that's a fair analysis of what, you know, maybe where Allegri fell short. As much of as I've praised him, he did do some things wrong in that game and things that certainly he could have done better. But with that, I think within the first 15 minutes, since Juventus were so dominant, you talk about pinning back the fullbacks in Real's system. And I think they were doing that to some extent with how much Alexandre was getting forward, you know, and Danny Alves did a pretty good job of Marcelo. But only within the first 15 minutes, you know, things changed and those fullbacks were able to get forward and enjoy a little bit more space without worrying about the likes of Sandro and Dani Alves later on in the game. Another thing that I'd say about Juventus that they could have done better is that Real really identified the strength in sort of their return passing in which, you know, they engaged the defensive line by activating someone like Dybala and then getting back to the central midfielders and then spraying it out wide through Pjanic or Khedira. And they, you know, as bad as people are claiming Dybala was, you know, they jumped on Dybala very quickly. And I think if I'm not mistaken, he got Ramos a yellow card pretty early on in the game and then one other player because how aggressively they were tackling into him. And then Dybala didn't really step up from that point. I think I was looking forward to seeing him continue to try and draw the fouls from those players and maybe even get someone like Ramos sent off, considering how aggressive they had to be to him, because that was really the key. That's what I highlighted in a number of the previews, is how good can Dybala be in disturbing that Real center back partnership as well as the midfield, because if he can slip between those areas, if you can slip in that right channel and force fouls from those players and cause them to be less aggressive and allow himself to really put his influence on the game, then that's going to cause a lot of problems for Real Madrid. And unfortunately, he didn't do that as the game went on.
Yeah, it was a little bit disappointing, but he is a young player. He's a very young player. And I thought that what he didn't do very well was sit behind Toni Kroos and look to stretch Real down that down Juventus's right and Real Madrid's left-hand side. I think that would have been perfect. But I think it was maybe not just to do with Dybala, it was also to do with his instructions from Allegri. They did sit very deep in almost a 4-4-2-0, you know, the classic Atletico shape. And it's sort of, it's that thing again, when you're a counter-attacking team, you need to have one outlet on the counter. You need to have one guy that doesn't really do defensive work and sits waiting for the break. And I feel they could have potentially done that with Dybala and they didn't do that, and it was a bit of a mistake. You know, Dybala's effectiveness in the game going forward was kind of negated. Yeah, he did draw a foul out of Sergio Ramos, which was good in early in the game, but he failed to create a chance, he failed to get a shot on goal, and only completed two dribbles in a game where he should have been dribbling at Juve all the time, especially given that early card to Sergio Ramos. But in terms of Juventus, they conceded more goals versus Real Madrid in the Champions League final than they did in the entire tournament. Maybe next season we'll have Buffon lifting the trophy. That is what everyone wants to hear. And again, we've got breaking news. So Yardim today was linked with a move to China, but now he's signed a new deal at Monaco until 2020. That is great news for all Monaco fans out there, including myself. Mbappe stays, Yardim stays, but Bernardo Silva had to go.
Nico, are you disappointed about
Nico,
that, Dave?
Excuse me, it's a moment's silence for Bernardo Silva having to fall out of my favourite footballers in the world list to Manchester City players. It's happened before.
It's interesting,
Jovetic,
though.
David Silva.
It's interesting, though, what this means for Monaco, considering I think one of the conclusions I drew when I heard the link that Yardim was possibly going to China was that meant that the club had probably told him, hey, we're going to fire sale the majority of these players that you've been successful with. So he wanted to make a decision for his future and maybe get – a lot more money for a short time or a long time of his career in China. But I think if he's staying, then that probably means that there's not as many players leaving Monaco as there's rumored to be. Hopefully for my club, Benjamin Mendy will still be leaving.
Back off. But... All right. I don't want to have to put another player on that list, Nico.
Benjamin Mendy's excellent. Hopefully he comes to Manchester City.
Sadio Mane had to go on that list as well.
Sadio Mane to Liverpool. Well, he was excellent. I still like him.
Waste of time watching RB Salzburg.
But yeah, it's good for Monaco that Yardin will stay, and hopefully they'll continue to achieve under his managerial reign.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Which moves us nicely on to the UCL team of the season, the Champions League team of the season. Yardim could be a coach, but unfortunately I didn't think he quite lived up to his heights. I liked his move against Juve in that second leg, going to a 3-4-1-2 to counterattack Juve's 4-4-2, but it didn't quite work. I think he needs a little bit more. One more season, Yardim will win coach of the season and will lift the title with Monaco. And actually, it's going to be Man United winning it, so I don't know what I'm talking about. But anyway, of course, the team of the season needs a manager. It's going to be simple. That's going to Zinedine Zidane. Nico, I don't care about your opinion. It's going to Zinedine Zidane. And he's going to be playing a 4-4-2 diamond. But Nico, who are we going to put in goal?
I think it has to be Buffon. For all the clamor surrounding his how much everybody likes him, you know, I don't know a person who watches football that doesn't like Buffon. He's a nice guy. He's a real competitor of the game. But he's also made some incredible saves this season against Barcelona, against Monaco, and he didn't make as many saves as probably he could have to some extent in the final. But he was still excellent. So I think we have to go for Buffon, considering Keylor Navas is no standout. Although he did pretty well in the final.
Yeah, Keylor Navas had a really good final. That was, again, I was very impressed by his performance in the final. He was pretty decent against Atletico as well, made a few pretty decent saves there. But Buffon, he deserves it. He didn't win it, again, lost it, but, you know, deserves to be there from his performances. I think both fullbacks, I don't think we can argue with this. It's going to be Carvajal and Marcelo. Both have excelled going forward. And Carvajal being fit for that final was absolutely massive, whether he was given painkillers or whatever for the ankle. You know, it was commitment by Carvajal, and again, making a massive impact in that final third. Marcelo, just think about the brilliant runs he went on, the one in the final for the fourth goal. You think about the goal Ronaldo scored against Bayern Munich, where Marcelo picked up the ball in central midfield and beat like three players, Thiago, Boateng and Kimmich, who had just come on, who was just really, you know, full of energy. Marcelo just powering through and then sliding it to Ronaldo to fire home. He's going to be in there. The two centre backs, Nico, I'm going to throw in Sergio Ramos because I loved his play acting against Cuadrado. But again, there was a stamp. If you've not rewatched that footage, Cuadrado stamps on Sergio Ramos, and that's probably why he gets sent off. I thought it was dissent.
No, he doesn't.
I think he did, Nico.
No, I disagree.
No, you disagree? Cool.
Well, absolute shithousery. And
good,
I know you're
excellent,
a big fan
excellent
of that,
shithousery. Perfect stuff.
And a Herrera fan over here.
Exactly. Ole, ole, and a Herrera. But the other centre-back, Nico, I'm going to give you the option to name him.
Yeah, Bonucci. Bonucci's been fantastic for a number of years now. And I think if we're being realistic, look at that back too. You know, you have the perfect combination of aggressor versus reader, Bonucci and Ramos. So I think that would make an excellent center back pairing. And you can't really argue with how well Bonucci has done, whether it be in a 4-4-2 system or a five-man defense in sort of a 3-4-1-2 or a 3-5-2.
Bonucci is a genius. I love the bit where they played out against Barca in the quarters. Was it the quarters they beat Barca? There's basically Bonucci got pinned in his own half, pinned right back. Barca pressing high, received a pass from Buffon on his on the byline. Basically, just plays out like it's nothing, absolutely nothing. In Serie A this season, Bonucci has completed 66% of his long balls. That is an insane accuracy. What a fantastic player! And you know, if he didn't play for Juve, I'd be wanting him to join Manchester United, but I just don't think that's going to happen. You know, these players at Juve seem like they love the club. They seem like it's a family, so I don't expect him to leave. Maybe Lindelof is the perfect guy for United, the next Bonucci, as I call him. Moving into defensive midfield, Casemiro comes in there, made the most interceptions in the knockout stages, won the most tackles in the knockout stages, and was directly involved in more goals than any other midfielder. That's that. You know, that's all I want to say about Casemiro. Fantastic at covering the flanks. A brilliant defensive midfielder. Into midfield, Nico, we've had a bit of a debate here. I've got to go with Kroos Modric. Who are you going to go with? Your two-man midfield in our diamond.
I think Kroos and Modric is a pretty decent shout considering how excellent they've been this season. But I think a case sort of has to be made for Miralem Pjanic. He was excellent, I think, in a lot of the games for Juventus. And it's I think his final performance is up for debate to some extent. I think he distributed well. Maybe he made some poor decisions in terms of he led the play well, but maybe he should have tried to force the play a little bit more down that right-hand side. Maybe Juventus would have had a little bit more success offensively if Pjanic was trying to get those balls through the right, because he's really the deep line playmaker for Juventus, and he controls a lot of what they do and how they go forward. So maybe a better decision making from him there, but I think he was excellent. But Kroos and Modric, you can't really argue with that. You've touched on how good Modric was, and I've touched on how good Kroos is, you know, changing positions from central midfield to deeper central midfield to almost left deep central midfield, and the things that he's able to do both with his vision and his passing are immense. So Toni Kroos is fantastic.
Yeah, I think I kind of agree with the Pjanic thing. I think he was fantastic in the semis, fantastic in the quarters, but didn't really show up in the final. I thought he was, you know, a bit part playing in that game. I think Kroos and Modric just kind of controlled the game, but it was a bit difficult for him to put his foot on the ball. Still a young player in central midfielders and will be, you know, when he hits 28, he's going to be absolutely fantastic. I love his ability from set pieces, his ability to control, his work rate as well. I think he put in something like 15 tackles against Barcelona in the second leg of the quarter final. So will be a fantastic player, but doesn't quite get in our team of the season. I think the two players, Kroos and Modric, get ahead. In terms of on number 10, it's got to be Isco, right? Nico showed such good form in 2017, broke through from the Real Madrid B team to the A team, and then it just became a fixture at attacking midfield, was brilliant against Atletico, recycling the ball, broke the Simeone press, and did quite well in the final. I didn't think he was up to the same level as the semi-final, but he did fantastic. I don't think there's any attacking midfielder that can kind of come close, Nico.
Bernardo Silva, Dave. He was excellent for Monaco this season, especially in the Champions League. So, but Isco was great as well. It was later in the season that he moved to or established himself. Although I think it's one of those things as well. And Real Madrid is extremely complicated with their club sort of politics. And I think they bought Isco a season before they bought James Rodriguez. But I think because of the fee, because of the reputation that James had garnered for himself, there was a feeling amongst the Real managers that, and this is another thing that I think Rafa Benitez was more inclined to play Isco, but there was a feeling amongst the people and the board at Real Madrid who almost not have as much say as the manager in terms of the lineup, but have a pretty decent say in terms of the lineup, more so than really any other club, is that they felt like they had to play James considering his price tag and everything, though Isco might have done better for them. And I think he's one of the players that has benefited from the fact that you have a manager that's not trying to play the politics as much or doesn't need to because of his stature. So, you know, Isco's brilliant and he's deserved to be there for a long, long time.
I would have put Bernardo Silva in there, but he moved to Manchester City, so unfortunately that relationship has broken down, Nico, so we're going to have to give it to the Spanish wizard, as he's called on American TV. Moving to our strikers, I think it's pretty simple. Mbappe and Ronaldo, both two top scorers in the knockout stages. Mbappe with 6 goals. Ronaldo, again, just breaking record after record. 10 goals in the knockout stages. I think he scored more goals in the knockout stages of the Champions League than in the group stages, which is absolutely ridiculous. Mbappe, this was his season where he really exploded as a striker. Fantastic. So, so good. So raw. One thing that he needs to develop, I think, is when he gets that big hit, when he, you know, someone like Bonucci or Chiellini comes in and crunches him, or Dani Alves, needs to just get back up and fight again. But what he's so good at is drifting into those wide areas from a central striker area. You know, Monaco's system is a narrow 4-4-2. What Mbappe does is he drifts wide and he almost comes in. He's almost a wide forward that plays centrally at the start. It's sort of a new age thing. Well, it's a thing that Thierry Henry used to do a lot. And he's just so good in those areas, so tricky, so you know, so good at beating his opponent. And just, he's going to get better and better. And I think it's the best thing for Yardim and Mbappe to stay at, of course, Monaco. We spoke a bit about Ronaldo before as well, but goal scoring wise, just a joke, an absolute joke. I don't think we're, you know, if we ever see a player like Ronaldo in front of goal again, we probably will do. I don't think goal scorers are one of these things where they come around a lot. People like Lionel Messi don't come around too often, but Ronaldo type players do. But what a performance this season. Maybe next season he'll be playing as a striker for the whole campaign. On to the game of the Champions League. Nico, what's your opinions here?
I think there's a few games that stand out. There were some pretty phenomenal games this season, but the 6-1 against
PSG.
Sorry, PSG and Barcelona, bit of a brain fart there, was excellent. But also the 5-3 Manchester City versus Monaco, I think that was more of like a full game thing, whereas the Barcelona game really heated up there. The majority of what you wanted to see was sort of in the last 20 minutes, because otherwise, other than that, it was really just a shelling of PSG in sort of their, you know, defensive 18 yards. So I think for me, game of the UCL would probably be the 5-3. But if we're talking about performance of the UCL from an individual player, I would say Neymar in the 6-1 for Barcelona.
Neymar was ridiculous in that game. Scored a free kick, scored a penalty. That assist for the last goal on his wrong foot was just unbelievable. I think this season we saw what Neymar could become, where his ceiling is, and his ceiling is so goddamn high. When he, you know, a few more seasons, the decision making goes up and whatever, he's going to be an absolute joke of a player. If Lionel Messi can be still at the club when Neymar hits his prime, that's the crazy thing. We're talking about Neymar now, and he's not even in his prime, and he will be absolutely insane. I agree. Performance of the tournament definitely goes to Neymar for carrying Barcelona back in that fantastic comeback. I'd probably say that is the game, but I'd probably give tie of the tournament to the one you mentioned, the Manchester City Monaco game. That was fantastic. Lamar, Silva, Mbappe, for, you know, Fabinho, Bakayoko, and then the City comeback with the, you know, the exposure in central midfield was fantastic from Pep Guardiola. So that was just a real good game. So many goals, and of course Monaco knocking out Manchester City, which was brilliant. We're going to finish off talking about Zinedine Zidane and how his you know, his sort of his time at Real Madrid has come so far. So in terms of his you know, his record as Real Madrid manager, he's won 75% of his games in just the season and a half he's been there. He's dominated Europe as well as La Liga, winning 2 Champions League titles, a La Liga, the Club World Cup, and the UEFA Super Cup. Nico, what are your thoughts on Zidane as a manager? Have you been surprised by how well he's done? Where does he go next?
I wouldn't say that I've been surprised as to how well he's done. What I will say is that, you know, myself included, and I think yourself included, a lot of people have taken an approach to this Real Madrid side, and really Zidane's tactics is that he's just benefiting from having such excellent players, and the only thing he's really doing is managing the egos of an extremely talented dressing room, and I think that's reductionist. But what I will say is that I think he's done extremely well to get the best out of his players right now with a possession system that doesn't take a whole lot of risks, but is still creating a lot of chances and a lot of good chances for excellent players. You and I were talking pre-record about sort of the balance, and it's a very basic scale in which we judge managers. But I think basically the way I think about football is, and this is obvious, it's not groundbreaking or anything, but the more risks you take in your possession and your passing and sort of the positioning of your players, how many players you put forward, obviously the better chance you have of scoring, but the better chance you have of conceding. And obviously the fewer risks you take in all those things, the less chance you have of scoring, but also the less chance you have of conceding. What Real Madrid have done this season is combine the best of those two things. They find a way to concede as few as possible and score as many as possible. And part of that is down to the possession system that Zinedine Zidane has put into effect at Real Madrid. Like I said, it doesn't take a lot of risks, but they're still able to create chances sort of out of nothing. You know, the moves from Ronaldo, his off-ball movement, his freedom sort of within the final third, Isco's ability to break lines and all those things. So he's done some amazing things. Another thing I will say is that he's done well, like I said, he's done well to get the best out of the players he has right now. But as to a concrete philosophy or a system out of Zidane, I'm more excited to see what he does when he maybe leaves Real Madrid or is given a completely new crop of players at Real Madrid to see what he comes up with in terms of his actual footballing philosophy. Because obviously there are things that we associate with Jose Mourinho, with Pep Guardiola, with Thomas Tuchel, with other managers. But I've yet to really nail down what is Zidane's actual football philosophy and what he would play if he was given a different managerial position.
I'd say it's all about control. I think it's something I mentioned before, it's about controlling every aspect of the game, whether they've got the ball and they are recycling it and they're working it from one flank to the other, or it's the counter-attack. And I think it's just control. That's how I'd say it. They're very safe in possession, but they're not. They advance their fullbacks very high. You know, they've got the people to play that system and to hold, you know, the likes of Ramos, Varane and Casemiro who sit back. The rest of the guys attack. You know, so he's attacking with seven players in most situations. And that recycling the ball is perfect. I love the 4-3-3 that he switches to when he's got a lead to counter-attack. I just really like how flexible he is, and I think that's the future of football, is flexibility. And Zinedine Zidane's shown that by playing a 4-4-2 diamond in the semi-final and in the final of the Champions League, when he sort of flirted with the formation before, but he's never really stuck to it. So I think I'd give him a lot of credit there. In terms of his record in Europe, it's an absolute joke. He's won 70% of his games in the Champions League. That's from 20 games. He's won 14, drawn 4, and only lost 2 games. Zinedine Zidane has won the same amount of Champions Leagues as he has drawn games in the Champions League. That's a joke. That is an absolute joke. But just to leave it on, you know, on sort of Zidane versus the greatest managers of all time, he comes up trumps with his win rate at 75.86%. That beats Luis Enrique, Diego Simeone, Jose Mourinho, Pep Guardiola, Carlo Ancelotti and Sir Alex Ferguson. It's an interesting one. I did a comparison of those guys this week. And obviously Zidane comes out with win rate. It's whether he can translate that to the next few seasons. Obviously that is currently peaking. That will, fall back to the mean, diverge to the mean. But where do you think that mean will be, Nico? Do you think he's going to be someone like Sir Alex Ferguson, where it'll be around 60%? Do you think he's going to be a Pep Guardiola win percentage at 70%? Where is Zidane's natural mean of his win percentage?
It's difficult to establish sort of the natural mean, especially right now. Like you said, he has the same amount of Champions Leagues that he does drawn games in that competition, which is absolutely insane. So maybe a little bit of conflated statistics, considering it's been a very brief managerial stint thus far. But as to what he'll progress to as his sort of statistics even out over time and stuff like that, I think he's going to be a very successful manager because he seems to be tactically adept. So I think it'll be somewhere between 60% and probably, yes, so 55 and 60%. I think that's where he'll land.
Yeah, I reckon it'll be 65, 70. I'd even say over 70. I just think he's
65 or 70%.
I think he'll be similar to Pep Guardiola. Obviously, Pep Guardiola's short time. Sir Alex Ferguson, another guy in my little pool of managers, played over 1,000 games, 1,220 games, and had a 61% win rate. That is ridiculous. Winning 49 trophies. We always forget how good Sir Alex Ferguson was as a manager. Absolutely ridiculous. 16 league titles, 3 obviously with Manchester United, 3 with Aberdeen, and winning those 2 Champions League at Old Trafford. Obviously, that record's beaten by Carlo Ancelotti, who's picked up 3 Champions Leagues. But again, Ancelotti's only won 4 league titles. That's crazy, right, Nico?
Yeah, he's not, for whatever reason, and I haven't, you know, but for whatever reason, he hasn't won many league titles, but he's definitely adept in the Champions League, and hopefully he'll fix that in his time at Bayern Munich. And I think they'll actually be a really successful team next year in the Champions League. But yeah, I looking at the statistics for Sir Alex Ferguson, considering how long of a career he had, I mean, definitely one of the best managers of all time. Definitely at the top of that conversation.
The best, I'd say. I think that's, you know, it's just one of those things that he is the best ever, Nico. And we've just got to accept that as football fans. But anyway, guys, that's been that for the Stat Monday Football Podcast today. Episode 75 over and out. Remember, I'm going to go on a little 2-week break. I need to go on a holiday. I need to sit on the beach for a little bit. And just, you know, think about football. Where do I want to go next in the world of football? What tactical philosophy do I think next is going to be best? Is it the 4-4-2 diamond, the 4-3-3? These all need to be thought about. But Nico, until next time you're on the Statman Dave Football Podcast, where can people find you? And are you going to have a holiday soon?
I don't think I'm going to have a holiday anytime soon. But maybe I'll come visit you this summer in England. Maybe I'll
Holy
hop over the
smokes,
pond.
Batman. Maybe we'll do a live podcast on video.
A live podcast. That'd be fun. I'm down for that.
Yeah, probably, you know, at the moment I haven't showered today. It's currently 5:35. I have literally been on my computer since I woke up. So maybe if Nico comes to do a live podcast, I will shower before the recording, Nico, I promise.
I hope that's the case, because from what you've told me on the WhatsApp communication.
Oh, God. The conversation between me and your WhatsApp, Nico, a secret. But no, of course, Nico. Thanks again for joining me. You've been a cracking servant this season and next season.
A servant? Is that what you're calling me? A servant?
No, like just a dude that's been on the podcast. I am a servant of the Statman Dave Football Podcast. I am a servant.
I think we're all servants.
Exactly,
of the
we're all servants of the world. For football.
Folks, if you consider yourself a servant of the Statman Dave Football Podcast, tag Dave, tag myself, and say I am a servant. So, similar to I am the whole.
Actually, we've got one more question before we leave. I can't remember which fella asked it on Twitter, but it was basically, we want to know, Nico, how your no-carb diet is going. That was from, let me find the name before we dive
in. I think it's Kareem Karas.
Kareem Karas on Twitter, at Karas Kareem on Twitter. How's the diet going, Nico? Are you gone crazy yet?
Dave, I had about 3 pizzas on Sunday with my family, so you can say the no-carb diet is not going well. So I'm not sure if I'm continuing the no-carb diet. Maybe I'll just have to get back in the gym. Unfortunately, I haven't gone that often, but yeah, 3 pizzas on Sunday. They were really good pizzas, to be fair. So
I had pizzas on Saturday, actually, but I can't. I'm trying to find
you, as you quoted on the front three a long time ago, I love a pizza.
Pizza's probably my favourite food, I'm going to be honest. There's a place in Shoreditch that does slices of pizza, and I'm just trying to find where it is. So if anyone goes to Shoreditch or wants good pizza in London, I can tell you exactly where it is. Give me 2 seconds.
Lawrence McKenna took me to a pizza place in, I think, on the east side of London one time. It was pretty good.
So you want to go to Voodoo Ray's. There's a Voodoo Ray's in Shoreditch on the Box Park, or there's a Voodoo Ray's in Dalston. Both are awesome. It's like American-style pizzas in a way, where you kind of buy a slice. And after the Champions League final, after a few lagers, should I say, or a few shandies, I needed some sustenance. And I went to Voodoo Ray's, and I got 3 pieces of pizza, and it was absolutely awesome. Nico, when you come, I'll take you to Voodoo Ray's, and you'll see that 3 pieces of pizza is far too much pizza for any man. But anyway, that's been that. Enough of the pizza chat, enough of the football chat. Until, I think in 2 weeks' time, on Wednesday, we'll get back into the Statman Dave Football Podcast, where I'm going to be dressing all the news. But until then, I'm going to have a wonderful holiday. You guys have a wonderful holiday. See you later. Thanks for listening.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.